From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. South African politics haven't been this volatile since the end of apartheid more than a decade ago. Nelson Mandela led the African National Congress, or ANC, from the time it was a revolutionary group fighting apartheid. He continued his leadership as an elected president. The ANC is still the nation's ruling party, but it could be close to splitting into two factions. Divisions within the ANC deepened last month when President Thabo Mbeki was ousted by party officials loyal to his rival Jacob Zuma. Several South African government leaders have resigned to show solidarity with Mbeki. The man in the hot seat, Jacob Zuma. He now leads the party and is expected to run for president. He's also been in the midst of a convoluted corruption trial. We asked Jacob Zuma where he sees the ANC heading.
Well, as you know, the ANC in South Africa determines the priorities and determines the direction and policies. Last December, we had our national conference wherein we took very specific resolutions which were aimed at highlighting the key issues, and to mention a few is the issue of education, because we believe that education was identified as an instrument to oppress the majority, and if we are to complete their liberation, we have to take very concerted effort to ensure that education is a critical and fundamental requirement and challenge that we've got to deal with. We also identified the issue of health care, given the diseases that affect our people, as an area that we are going to be focusing on and prioritizing. We also identified the issue of rural development, which goes a long way to address our poverty. Also, we identified the issue of the crime in South Africa, that as an issue of focus, we'll be looking at the details of all of this.
South Africa is a driver of not only economies throughout Africa, but a driver of trade around the world. And yet your nation is divided by the lines of class, by the lines of ethnicity, by the lines of race. What do you see as the number one priority for uniting people around a common political goal, people who don't even like each other?
Well, firstly, you should take into account that South Africa comes from a very divided racially kind of society, wherein racism, more than any other kind, was institutionalized. And we had to tackle this from the beginning and indeed establish a new nation, which we call the Rainbow Nation. The important thing about it is that we did not say, because there's been racism, then we're not going to talk about it. We identified diversity in South Africa as important component for the unity of South Africa, that any different national group, whether by color or by size, is not less important than the other, that all national groups are equal. They should be equal in everything. That is a platform from which we move, and therefore say South Africa is in fact a multiracial society. But it is also important to bear in mind that the issue of race and ethnicity is not peculiar to South Africa. It's an international problem. In some places, it has caused wars and genocides and mass killings. But I think in South Africa, we did not shy away from the fact that we are different national groups. And the current situation, I think people who raise the issue of race or ethnicity as a major problem in South Africa, they are actually exaggerating the situation. The question then that challenges all of us, how do we deal with the policies in terms of economic development, in terms of the opportunities, that you address that as the second most important area of uniting ethnicities and everybody else?
Let me ask you for a concrete example of something that you think has failed in terms of how South Africa has approached the economy post-apartheid and how you think it could be fixed?
Well, I'm not sure whether I could identify that these specific things has failed. I'm sure critics standing out there could be in a better position to do so. What has come, I think very clearly, is that as we move forward, there has been the widening of the gap in terms of the statistics between the rich and the poor. So this is what you discover as you implement your correct policy. So the challenge is, how do we close the gap? How do we encourage the particular sides of economy to move so that you could raise the standard and the opportunities of those who are disadvantaged?
Let me go to two specific issues that intersect with the economy. One of them is immigration. There have been waves of people fleeing Zimbabwe, for example, coming to South Africa, and there also has been a corresponding wave of anti-immigrant violence. So when you think about South Africa's need to be a leader in the region and to respect the needs of people who are in dire straits versus the needs of the people who are your own citizens, how do you make a specific choice between how to deal with people who have crossed your border illegally but who may be malnourished and who may need help versus the people who are already in your country?
Well, that is a challenge that faces many countries. If people are pushed by the situation from their countries, you cannot say, go away. South Africa tended to adopt a policy that when people come to South Africa, instead of creating refugee camps, you actually allow them to integrate to society so that they are part of society in one form or the other. But I think what maybe we did not do is to ensure that we record everybody who comes very meticulously so that we know the numbers of the people are in the country, those who have got skills and those who do not have skills, and how to handle that issue. But they are not just from Zimbabwe only, they are from many countries in the continent. Of course, in South Africa, as you said, there were some conflicts that happened in the recent past. But what did we discover specifically in what has been called xenophobia? We actually discovered that key, or at the center of all of this, was in fact the question of criminality. Criminals who wanted to take advantage so that they could take the economic things that people were coming from outside were doing. That's what we discovered as a major factor. And therefore, it means crime in South Africa, in a sense, contributed to this and influenced this kind of a situation, because people in South Africa have never been xenophobic.
Let's move into the mix of domestic and international politics. Thabo Mbeki, the former president, with whom you had, I understand, a friendship and then a rivalry, was someone who has been trying to negotiate a brokered co-government in Zimbabwe, a functional co-government between rivals there. Those talks seem to have fallen apart. What's your role, if any, in trying to make sure that this coalition government, this fragile coalition government in Zimbabwe, continues? Or because of your political issues with Thabo Mbeki, is that just an area where you feel you can't operate your influence?
Firstly, Mbeki has been my comrade and friend all the time. He continues to be, and I'm not certain that we could describe me and Mbeki as rivalries. But of course, We will do what we've been doing all the time. We've been part of interacting with the Zimbabweans, in addition to what former President Mbeki was doing, talking to ZANU-PF, talking to MDC to say let us find a solution, encouraging everybody. I think we'll continue to do so to ensure that the situation is resolved in Zimbabwe, because the point that we've been making to our brothers and sisters in Zimbabwe is that the plight of the Zimbabwean people is too big a challenge. It is important that they put the interests of the country and the people of their country first in order to resolve the issue, so that once they put that in mind, it should be easy to compromise on the difficulties that they have as they want to implement their agreement.
I have to ask you about something delicate that I know many people have asked you about, which was an allegation of rape, which was eventually tossed out. But you did admit to having sex with an HIV-positive woman without a condom. What have you learned from that experience? And what I mean by that is, what have you learned from the outrage that came from many quarters, from AIDS activists in particular, ordinary citizens saying, how could a man we esteem so much be so bullheaded about this? Because we've known for years that taking a shower will not help in any way with HIV. What have you learned from that experience?
I think the question of the shower has been exaggerated by the media. I think we dealt with that matter in South Africa very well. And there was a prosecution that was asking meticulous, detailed questions as to what happened, for an example, at this point, what happened at that point. So we had to explain every other thing. And the media picked this one up to say that I said, if you take a shower, then you cure AIDS. I never said so. And for that mistake, I apologize publicly to the nation. And I'm sure we all say to air is human. There's nobody who's super in this world. I think to me, once I realized and I learned that I made a mistake and I apologize and the matter, and I think the South African people appreciated that, and that's why they have confidence in me.
Well, sir, I want to thank you so much for your time. We've certainly covered a lot of ground. Thank you.
Thank you very much to you and your listeners.
We've been speaking with Jacob Zuma, the leader of the ruling party in South Africa, the African National Congress, or ANC.